everybody. Welcome to another episode of Citizen Kane, streaming to you live from beautiful, windy Keene, New Hampshire. My name is Conan Soliday, and joining me, as usual, the ever, always delightful, always ever delightful, Shauna Nash.
Yep.
That's her name. We do stream live every Sunday night, 8 to 9 p.m. I'm using the YouTube platform this time around. I've been using Facebook. I've been having some difficulties with it, as well as using too much processing on my computer. So I've had some difficult. The last couple of episodes have been difficult.
Yeah, don't watch the last couple of episodes. No, listen to them.
No. The recordings are good.
Recordings are good.
The live streams were crap.
Don't watch the live streams.
Well, yeah.
And if you're you're probably not watching this on the live stream either. Sorry.
Well, not yet. Not yet. We're still trying to get the word out there, and we're trying to get people involved. But if every live stream is crappy, then no one's going to watch the live. They're going to wait for me to put out the final product on YouTube and on Cheshire TV, which is it's a clean looking version.
Yeah. So watch the clean looking version, and pretty soon you'll want to watch it live because we do have available ways to contact us, and eventually, pretty soon, the live streams are going to be viable.
No, they're viable right now.
Okay. Well,
my fingers are crossed.
All right.
Get in contact with us if you would like during the show. 267-521-2771 is the number to call. Or, of course, you can Skype us. Citizen Kane is the handle. You can also Facebook me, or you can email me. show@citizenkane.org is the email address. I thought there was something else I was going to say.
Nope. Message you on Facebook, email you, show@citizenkane.org. Facebook is facebook.com/citizenkaneshow.
Nope, just citizenkane.org.
Okay.
And I remember what I was going to say. Shauna, how you been?
I've been well. Did you know that if you accept a bottle opener from an insurance company as like insurance company swag, it doesn't open a bottle very well?
Because
it's a joke about insurance.
But you don't do insurance anymore.
I don't do drinking, but I tried to open a soda bottle, a soda glass bottle, with the insurance company labeled bottle opener, and it did not want to do it. It was trying to mitigate risk, even through a little bottle opener. It was lovely. So I cleaned it up. That's pretty much how I'm doing.
That's what you were. I heard you up there
talking to the cat,
kicking things. Well, let's get on with the show. Of course, Citizen Kane, we try to deconstruct weekly news here in the area, Keene, New Hampshire, especially. Sometimes we'll, broaden our search, talk about things that are actually going on in the state. But right now, I think we're just going to talk about stuff that's going on in Keene.
This week in Keene.
Yay! Last week, not a whole lot was going on. We had one city council meeting. There was a public hearing involved. That was the very first thing that took place there. And then, of course, we had to shut up because after that, it's all quiet time and there's no input from the public. But the first hour, public time, and it all had to do with the proposed expansion of Keene's Historic District. The annexation of 52 more parcels from
Lower Main Street.
Winchester Street to 101, so Lower Main Street. Yeah. Of course, we went to the public workshop a month and a half ago, and overwhelmingly the people who lived there were opposed to this. They didn't want to have to deal with jumping through any more hoops or paying any more permit fees to do something that I could do here for one permit fee.
Right.
I mean, we should already be outraged that we're having to get permission to do things on our own property. Here, they're actually doubling it. So the people came out. They're like, no, we don't want this. And there were a couple individuals. One, I have some video of her that we're going to play in a second. Juliana Bergeron. And I think she had some help from some others. Not very happy with this either. I know that historic or heritage district signs went up in opposition to this. Letters to the editor were sent in. email and mail were sent out to the residents and to let everyone know what was actually going on. And we had our first public meeting, and overwhelmingly, again, it was eight who spoke against it, and there were two who were originally for it, but, and this is the funny part, decided to drop the proposal. So the original planners involved in this new annexation decided that because there were some huge amendments that were made to the original plan from eight bullets down to three bullets of control, of power.
Of things that if you want to do this to your house, you got to go through the second layer of permission grant, mm-hmm. down to three. The only people who there were people who spoke in favor of historic districts, but against commission. These right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the only people who were in favor of the historic district annexing Lower Main Street were only wanting this dropped because it wasn't good enough, because it didn't give enough control.
Right, and that is what they're saying. I think it has a little more to do with the opposition. No one wants to be, because the people in control of this this plan are our neighbors. They just don't live in this particular district. No one wants to be the neighbor that has induced this type of pain and suffering on people. They don't want to be known as that. They don't want to be those people. So they're saying, "Yeah, you know what? We're gonna pull out because we don't want to be bad neighbors."
That's not what any of them said, though. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm saying their true motivations. They want to be good neighbors. They want the historic district. They want to preserve quaint old Keene, but at the same time, they don't want to make enemies with their neighbors.
That is one hopeful way of looking at it, I guess. I hadn't considered that.
Well,
I always went the route of they're saying it's not good enough. They're not getting the control that they want, so they want to drop it and come back, I suspect, to come back again later with either more stringent or just sneak it in with even less public knowledge of what's going on.
Well, as long as we're watching these things, they're not going to be able to do that.
I think as long as people are telling them, you know, at the first meeting in September, the committee members who want the historic district were reporting that they were being told, you know, stop what you're doing, quit your job, stop, you know, we don't want you doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that they would have recommended during that public workshop in September, well, my neighbors don't want this, and I really care about my neighbors. I don't think for a second that they care about what their neighbors think. They don't consider them neighbors. They consider them people who need to be told what to do with their homes.
I think there are some in that group who might lean that direction, but I think ultimately human beings want to burn bridges with their fellow people.
I mean, if there are neighbors, there are people who live at, from the workshop that we went to in September, there were people who live all the way on the other side of town, as far away from these homes as we live, saying, yeah, they should be preserved. There should be the historic district telling these people what to do.
For the whole of the community.
For the whole of the community and all that claptrap. And, I mean, if there are people, they weren't on the historic district committee. They didn't have anything to do with it. So it's hard for me to believe that. I mean, maybe you have a better view of humans in their natural state than I do. But
possibly. I did hear one argument that wasn't discussed a whole lot. There was one young lady who spoke very eloquently. She gave a good presentation against this. Her name is Carmela. She brought up one of the problems that the Heritage District failed to jump on. And hold on, let me change the channel real quick.
Change the channel. Not you guys. He gets changed.
The Historic Commission did a poor job in fostering relationships with the homeowners and small businesses within this draft ordinance. How many individuals working on this ordinance can name the owners of each of the 40 different parcels? Would it have been too much to ask for these individuals to have meetings with each homeowner and small business owner to discuss the ordinance when it was first assigned to them by City Council? It has only been recently, the past couple of meetings, where the homeowners and small business owners have received notification via email and mail about upcoming meetings. As a result, we, the homeowners and small businesses, have felt that we were never partners in this process.
So there you go. Heritage District and the subcommittee, Historical District Subcommittee, have been working on this for 2 years.
2 years, yeah. Think
about
that.
The first time I've ever heard about this was a month ago. And I suspect a lot of the residents in this area were hearing about it for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And they're kind of a little bit peeved about that. That these decisions are being made behind closed doors.
Yep.
And maybe they're being submitted letters to the editor, committee meetings, agenda packets. But I mean, who reads that stuff? You have to place the letter in the person's hand, especially if you're talking about mandating rules that they're going to have to adhere to.
Yep.
You can't put it in a bulletin board on this side of the city and expect people to find out about it. You got to go knock on their doors and talk to them.
I think that kind of makes my point when you're saying that these people didn't want to feel like they were being bad neighbors. That's why they wanted it dropped. They don't know anybody's name. They don't, you know, they barely could be bothered to email anybody about it, mm-hmm. or notify the homeowners. That's not good neighborly. That's not, you know, the idea that they are dropping it because they are getting hurt in their tummy heart about whether they're a good neighbor or not. They've had 2 years to learn, you know, 52 homeowners' names. Not even that many,
well,
actually.
We also know, according to the master plan, Keene's master plan, that John Theriot has brought up on multiple occasions, probably needs to be updated, because I was never there during the process.
Probably needs to be destroyed.
I would be in favor of that as well. But
we have indoor plumbing figured out.
But Lower Main Street is not the only annexation that these people are prepared to capture. There's also Lower Washington and Lower Court Street,
and probably Upper Washington soon too.
So this is not going to go away. They failed in Lower Main. You're right. There are other roads with old structures on them.
That are up
next.
West Street from Central, at least past St. James.
Let's continue on with Caramella.
I am not in support of this ordinance, but do not confuse it with me not wanting to preserve the heritage and historical elements of my house. I am disheartened to read the letter written by Louise Zerba, a member of the HDC Ordinance Review Subcommittee, which was written on September 19, 2016. How she had to do soul searching on her vote to withdraw the ordinance, felt like she had given up, and all the effort she had put in the past few years was not important enough. Although I appreciate her passion, no one has more appreciation or pride in my house than me and my family. I purchased it because of its beauty and location, and I plan to uphold it as long as I can do so.
Keywords: no one has more appreciation for my own property than me, and no one else can dictate that appreciation.
Yeah. I mean, how dare you tell me how to appreciate my home?
I think Juliana really nipped it in the bud here. I liked her testimony as well.
Agree with my neighbor in that perhaps in the future it might be wise for city committees such as the Heritage Commission to start by building consensus amongst the people who might be affected by the proposed changes. That said, while the idea sounds lovely, it appeals only to those of you not living in our neighborhood, and it has become a little too easy for others to tell us it is for the good of the whole. Well, they have no skin in the game.
I think that's going to be the title of the show, by the way. Either the whole or the good of the whole or no skin.
No skin in the whole game.
No skin in this game.
So it goes, it's not done. They voted on to send it back to the same committees that were dealing with it at the workshop back in September.
In this case, just PLD. I don't think the planning board is going to be involved in this next one.
Okay, so Planning License Development Committee is going to have another public...
It will be public. You can speak to it if you like.
Okay, so it'll be public.
And that'll be this Wednesday.
26th.
26th? This Wednesday, 7 o'clock. So, and you know, the other funny thing about this, though, is the recommendation to drop this plan was submitted a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
But because the notices had been sent out for a public meeting, this had to go forward.
They had to have.
And when I say had to, I think it's legal. I think the law demands
that. Statutory, yeah.
It might just be kind of a precedence where it's good etiquette. You send a bunch of letters out, and all of a sudden, and then you show up, and there's no one there. That would be kind of crappy.
I mean, what if they recommended to drop? Some other committee recommended to drop something that everybody wanted.
Right.
Then, you know.
And that's where the problem lies. I do believe that the Planning License Development Committee will not recommend this. But even if they don't, it's still going to go to City Council.
It'll have to go to the Planning Board, and then they'll have to say something to City Council about this.
And then there's 15 people who are going to vote in the nay or the negative.
And then it's their decision, not yours.
So
just like the Bearcat.
One other thing that is going to planning license development this Wednesday is the new sign ordinance.
Political signs. Because that's the only thing that everybody's jacked up about right now.
If you drive around Keene, overwhelmingly, the signs, and especially the last 2 weeks, I mean, they've really gone up. They're everywhere, and including places where they really shouldn't be, like the roundabouts.
The roundabouts have enough stuff going on.
And I believe that's what really got the original complaint going. Because, sorry, people who are running for office, including myself, it's against the law in New Hampshire to put signs on public property. You can put them on state-controlled rights of way, so 101 and 9, 12, 10, 11,
13.
all the roads.
Whatever that thing is.
It's very confusing. There's the stupid north-south road here in Keene. However, because a complaint was made back in 2008, I believe.
2008.
The complaint was submitted. The city was like, what do we do about this? So they called the attorney general. Attorney general at the time says, no, you can't do anything.
First Amendment, leave it there.
I don't even know if that was part of the argument. They just said, don't do anything.
Well,
this year, new attorney general, and he's actually reading the statute, which says no political advertising shall be placed on or affixed to any public property. And because that's what it says. There's another state statute that allows city ordinances to actually create... City municipalities to create their own ordinances or bylaws. There is already, if you open up the sign ordinance here in Keene, it is overwhelmingly complicated. I mean, it's not complicated, it's thorough.
Which means it's complicated, and you're probably only going to be looking it up for one specific tiny thing, and you're going to be reading a city ordinance about the whole range of things, so you will get lost and, you know, hope everything ends.
Mm-hmm. And if you do open it up, you're going to find out that, guess what? You can't put a sign on your yard without getting a permit, and you're not going to get the permit. If you wanted to put a political sign in your yard, that's when this state statute comes up, which allows you to put a sign in your yard, but only... during a certain period of time before and after the election. So that's a problem in my book. Now, if it's actually a safety hazard where you're causing an issue, you're blocking traffic or you're blocking line of sight, like your sign is just too big and it's right on the corner of your lot and you can't see the stop sign or you can't see the other lane of traffic.
Blocking your view.
That's a pretty good reason to deny a sign. But if it's just a sign in your yard and it's your yard, that's where I have a problem, and that becomes a free speech issue. I think you should be able to put political signs in your yard all day long. Here's the question. Here's the big question. We're talking about public property, city property, and public rights of way.
Well, the statute
which everyone
addresses
already...
all three, so where's the first part of your problem? Because you say that you have a problem with every segment of this, and I'm not...
Okay, so, first of all, if it's your private, there shouldn't even be an argument. It shouldn't even be included in this. If it's your property, do whatever you want. Just don't cause accidents.
Okay. But which isn't going to be...
But now we're talking about public property, property that you and I pay taxes on.
Yep.
Again, if you're causing a disturbance where you can harm your neighbors, you can harm the community, again, I would say, yeah, don't do it. But if it's just a public political sign, it's only going to be up for a month, and it's public property that we own. Let me say that again. We own it. If you have a problem, city, with us owning it, well, you shouldn't be in control of it, and you probably need to sell it. I don't know if you're going to be able to sell it right of way, but a little skinny right away on the other side of the sidewalk. But, I mean, yeah, you can't please everyone. Some people want to see the signs. Some people want to get their name recognition out there.
Right.
Some people believe that it's a spirit of politics. It's a spirit of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think it's just tacky and ugly. And I agree with all three of them, by the way. It is ugly, but it's public property. Well, and it's the same thing with this. It's the same thing with Central Square when they put the Christmas tree out. What about the people who don't agree with a Christmas tree or Christmas lights? What about the pagans? What about
well,
the
Christmas tree is pagan? What about, as most people?
Right. What about the nativity scene?
Love to remind me every time.
What about the nativity scene, guys? Who want to put a scene up there?
Have you ever been to Keene?
Do they do that?
No, they don't do that out here.
Yeah, I know. But what happens with the people who? It's public property. So it's like you can either have it or you can't. It's like either nothing or you have to accept everything.
Well, that sounds like chaos and that sounds terrible. And I hope it doesn't get to that point any further than it already has in society. Well, the law against the public property sign, the signs being on your private property, I can only imagine that those came about because somebody was putting a sign that says, you know, my neighbor does this and that, and they're a communist or they're, you know, a
no, it's a it's aesthetics. That's all it is. It doesn't have anything to do with that ideology or political thought or free speech. It's all about aesthetics, and no one wants to see 50 flamingos in someone's yard. They're gonna complain, and they're gonna create some law. And by the way, I couldn't find a state law having to do with signs in your yard. This is the ordinance that I'm referring to is okay. Keene only. I don't know that there is a state law that prohibits residents of New Hampshire to put signs in their yard.
Okay.
So I couldn't find it. If someone knows about it,
so there is a law against, there is some type of law against signs on private property?
An ordinance, a Keene ordinance.
There's an ordinance, okay.
If you move to Swansea, I don't know how they handle their signs. I don't even know if they have an ordinance there or, you know, any of the surrounding towns.
Well, I guess until you guys find a good case to make a stink about it, it doesn't matter because nobody's really enforcing that one.
Exactly. And that's the thing. If you drive around town, you've got the signs. You have yard sale signs.
Okay.
You have foot traffic signs, directional signs for like the marathons that go take place. You have businesses that advertise, so some guy's putting the roof on next door. What does he do? He puts his roofing sign in the yard, and it usually stays there for a couple of weeks.
Yep.
Illegal.
And yet, it's presumed that he has the permission of the owner. And I don't know of any examples where, I mean, the city clarifying isn't really addressing those types of signs. They're really only addressing the political signs and clarifying what streets.
Correct. And that is where, and that is why this is going back to PLD, Planning License Development. Because in 2015, Supreme Court case, Reed versus Town of Gilbert.
So now I'm confused. Is there no city ordinance against
political science? Yes, there is.
There is. So what are they sending back to PLD? Are they going to repeal it, gut it, change it to something else?
I think, and I'm not a lawyer, I believe that because there is only state law against political signs and not any other signs, I believe there's a problem. In this particular case that I just read off, Reed versus Town of Gilbert, in favor of Reed, the United States Supreme Court ruled 9-0. Regulations that categorize signs based on the type of information they convey, e.g. temporary, political, and ideological, and then apply different standards to each category are content-based regulations of speech and are not allowed under the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. In this case, Gilbert, Arizona, has sign regulations that prohibit the display of outdoor signs without a permit, but exempts 23 categories of sign, including the three relevant here. Not the same situation we're dealing here in New Hampshire,
mm-hmm.
but it seems like there's only laws that have to do with political signs and not anything else. Now there are there are municipalities that focus in on other types of signs, but I believe that there needs to be a broad-based sign law. Otherwise, you are directing your intentions at only one type of sign, which is a freedom of speech violation. Now, again, this doesn't defend hazardous sign placement. So you still can't do that. You can still make that argument that, you know, if you...
Well, then you wouldn't be making this argument. You wouldn't be going after based on these statutes that Keene has or the state ordinance, because those don't... They all say you can't do it, or you can with the owner's consent, the mm-hmm. property owner's consent. They all say you can't do it unsafely. You can't put it in a place that, you know, impedes traffic or anything. So it's kind of irrelevant.
Well, I and that's why I think when it goes back to committee, it's going to, instead of all of these roads, do we still have that article open? Basically, every single main highway in Keene and the roundabouts have been labeled forbidden. And by the way, again, they were already forbidden. It was already against a lot of to put signs on these in these areas. But I believe it's going to be changed to something like no roundabouts, and maybe certain corners, dangerous corners. But forbidden every single one of these streets, I think it's overdoing it.
It's a lot of streets.
So that is also taking place on Wednesday. So big night Wednesday. I will probably be going to that. I'll definitely be watching it.
So I'm not clear on what they're going to do on Wednesday.
I don't know that anybody knows.
They're going to address it.
They're going to talk about it. They're going to have the city lawyer there.
Uh-huh.
I bet you the city lawyer is doing his research right now. He's probably looking at the same.
Well, somebody better.
He's looking at the same case. Because here's the problem. If this does win out as a violation of freedom of speech,
mm-hmm.
someone's going to get sued. I mean, I don't care if there's a law. I mean, if you're violating freedom of speech,
mm-hmm.
someone's going to sue somebody, and someone's going to be picking up the tab.
Well, someone's going to be suing the town is what they're going to be doing. They're That's not right. somebody suing somebody. They're suing the town or the city.
Right. And we are going to be picking up the tab, and I would really rather not have to deal with that. It's already the Robin Hood case. Robin Hood case is a prime example of a freedom of speech violation, and the town lost every single time.
That is something that some activists could have avoided completely.
And personally, I kind of like the signs.
I don't think they're nearly as offensive as people take them to be. I mean, there are signs up there that are for people I don't like. And I understand that gut reaction of, ugh, I don't like that person.
Or all of the pretty flowers in the roundabout. You can't see them anymore because of all of the...
You're not supposed to be looking at the pretty flowers in the roundabout. I mean, I think people are assigning a significance to these signs way more than what they actually can do. And I think it's indicative of how sensitized everybody has become to media and other messages of outside forces telling you what to think and what to believe.
You say that, but you know what? The same...
Find it. The same...
What's the word I'm looking for?
The same people, the same... I know there are people saying the argument during the committee meeting where this was first discussed, and everybody was like, yeah, well, that's not going to make me change my vote if I see a sign of somebody.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's not the point. It's, at best, it's for morale booster.
what I saw was 3-1. They were all in favor of this. They're like, yeah, it's a great idea.
The ban on the signs.
You're correct. The ban on the signs. And right across the room, there was a proposal to implement the blue line down Marlboro Street. That took a while to load up. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's terrible. Don't overdo that again.
Why not?
Right across the street, there was a proposal to implement the blue line down Marlboro. And everyone loves that.
It's in the same meeting.
No, it was a different meeting. Okay. Same night. And they were all in favor of it.
Yep.
So it's like, wait, hold on now. You want to impose this belief, this support of this department, which is a type of freedom of speech, it's a banner, it's a flag.
It's an expression, it's a statement.
And on the other hand, you want to forbid something that you think is tacky, but it's the same type of statement, a banner of what you believe.
Yeah.
On public property. So basically, if that blue line comes up and they get their blue line and they pass this ordinance,
someone's going to sue
to forbid. No, they're just hypocrites in my book, because they think one thing is good, but this is bad because tummy heart, like you said.
Well, they may be hypocrites, or they may be just simply inconsistent, but it is a political move. I mean, there's a very common understanding among people that the First Amendment means everybody shut up in public.
But that's not what it means.
That doesn't matter. The understanding, the public common understanding, is that the First Amendment means nobody says anything in public. You don't express religion, you don't express any politics in public, you don't express any ideological bend either way, and if there's any public space and the whatever type of government has control over that public space allows it, mm-hmm. that's the same as them creating a law mandating that statement and mandating belief in that, and that is, quote, not allowed. So it makes sense that they would ban everything.
Right.
And it just takes one person to file a lawsuit. You asked why they're, you know, where are the nativity scenes? It just, you know, I'm sure that there were nativity scenes at some point in public spaces, even in Central Square, I'm sure. And it probably just took one person, or maybe for New Hampshire, it took, you know, just the spirit of the times to, you know, take over. And people don't do it anymore. But there are places where somebody sued because that's freedom of speech. And you can't have them, the government in any form, supporting any type of speech. And, you know, you ask about the...
But Christmas trees are
the Christmas lights and the Christmas trees and the Christmas lights. And that will, you know... That's just waiting for somebody to sue. I'm sure there'll be some... That's just waiting for somebody. And... In the case of the blue line, yes, it is a statement. Yes, it is the government in this case, because Philip Jones, who brought it, couldn't figure out how to buy paint himself at Home Depot because he cares so much about this. He has to go run to government to do it for him to make the statement.
He actually proposed buying, they're going to buy the paint themselves.
He proposed buying the blue tint to be added to paint that's already there.
Okay, and then, yeah, and then they'll a government worker will put it up. But he still can't go out there and just do it.
Keep the receipt, dude. You'll be fine.
He's going to get permission.
So there is the government in the blue line case, you know, violating the First Amendment, or, well, supposedly violating the First Amendment by making a statement. And that's clearly a risk they're willing to take because it's a very politically safe thing for a city government to do. If you are the, you know, libertarians think of government as a monopoly on force, and the police are the enforcers of that force, it makes a lot of sense for that government
to protect its own.
To say, hey, you're doing a good job. Thanks. So it's... I think you're getting a little worked up when you call it hypocritical. It's certainly inconsistent. I don't really have a problem with inconsistency, but it's, you know, just they're not doing this because they really care about the weak being protected. They're doing it because it's political. And in the case of the people who of, I guess, at least Philip Jones, who brought it up, it's, you know, he said it was inspired by children doing it. So there's also the fact that men these days are...
Those kids.
Ruled by children. We so need to talk about those drops. Those are the worst.
My interpretation of freedom of speech is it does not protect the speech that you're comfortable with, that you want to hear, mm-hmm. that you're okay with. It protects the speech that you are not okay with. That's really the whole point of it. So it's the things.
I think it's to protect the speech that the government is not okay with.
It's the thing. Yes. It's something the government can't do. Let's take that away.
Provides justification for getting the matches.
So this Wednesday, come all, or just wait till I talk about it again next.
No, just come. Sunday. You'll get your own idea of what happened. Or you need to be there.
Or, of course, you can watch it.
Especially if you're watching this on Cheshire TV.
So,
what else are you doing?
There were two other things that took place at the city council meeting besides all their voting and whatnot. This was not open to the public, and I found out the hard way when I asked to talk on one. And I got shut down by the mayor. He does not like me. That's all right. I don't like him. I thought this was a pretty interesting collection of data.
This was a presentation that they gave. It's a PowerPoint that they just showed everybody, turned off the lights and talked through it.
Yeah, it's a City of Keene Benchmarking Review 2016. I'll go ahead and put this in the show notes so you can peruse it at your...
At your leisure.
At your leisure. I'm sorry, I was reading. And basically it was compiled by the finance department because they've got to do something.
I think it sounded reasonable. I mean, they said, we don't really have a bench. We don't know how we're doing, so our book report.
I'm sure they do this every now and then, but it hasn't been done in a good couple of years. I think there was one in 2012.
So what'd they tell us?
Well, basically, they were talking about, they took 16 of the most highly populated cities in New Hampshire. Bedford, Concord, Derry, Dover, Goffstown, Hudson, all the way down to Salem. Keene's in there, Londonderry, Manchester. And broke them down by population. Rated them by population, by tax rate, by the assessed value, the total assessed value of the cities and towns. And there were some others like mortgage rates, mm-hmm. average mortgage rates from these areas. And also individual and household salaries. So we got to see all this data, and we all got to see them in graph form. And lo and behold, Keene, of course, is the highest tax rate in the land. But that's going to come up later. It's not as important later on when we find out that because of the value of our homes is so low, we're not actually paying as much taxes. We're still paying a lot of taxes, but there are other communities that are paying a lot more. Simply, they have a lower tax rate, but because their properties are worth more, they're mm-hmm. paying more taxes per year.
So that would sound like we have higher taxes. We still have high taxes.
Oh, yeah. We have.
I mean,
we have really high taxes.
You're paying a higher rate on a smaller number. You know, a bigger percentage of a small number could still come out bigger than a small percentage of a larger number.
Right. And if you look at the taxes raised, you'll get an idea that pretty much all the communities of similar size, like, for example, Bedford, which is 21,000, Keene is 23,000 population, they're spending $10 million more on their,
they're raising
$10 million more to be spent on government and school,
and yet their tax rate is 12% less.
Mm-hmm. But their assessed value is double, so their homes are worth more. Their land is worth more. And this, by the way, this also affects businesses.
I remember in the late 90s and early 2000s, there were a lot of people, even libertarians, but mostly conservative types, were pointing out that JFK supported lower taxes because you would generate more money. The government would generate more money if you had lower taxes because it, you know, incentivized and people earn more.
Well,
and therefore,
that,
and I think that kind of proves it, you know, at least, I mean, you can use statistics for whatever, but that kind of proves that right there, comparing Bedford, which has 10% less, 12% less taxes than Keene, and still manages to raise, you know, $10 million more. I mean, there's a lot more to it than that. Bedford, from what I hear, is a little...
A little ritzy?
Little richer area. I mean,
well,
what do I know?
Just look at that assessed value. The assessed value of Bedford is almost double what Keene is worth.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at any 2 points like I just did and come to any conclusion that you want. But I just remember hearing that a lot, that Kennedy was in favor of lower taxes because it generated more revenue for the government.
I've never heard that, actually.
You should have read the stuff that I read when I was kid.
That's not a very Democrat thing to do, Shauna. That sounds like one of them wacky conservatives would come up with that. What is it? They got the Laffer curve, and you also have the trickle-down economics, where give people more money, and they'll actually spend it on things they want to spend. They'll put it back in the community.
Well, take it up with Kennedy. I don't know.
Instead of spending it on government employees who don't provide anything, they don't make anything.
I'm just telling you what I heard.
Let's see if there was any other numbers that popped up. Basically, yeah, definitely check this out. It's very interesting. I think that this is going to lead to a lot of Keene City planners. They're going to use this for many years, saying, sorry, if you look at the stats, Keene actually isn't paying all that much. I pulled up the...
That's what you were trying to say a lot.
The 215 tax rate, 3441.
Yeah.
Based on the price of a home in Keene, the average price of a home is $160,000. And when you put those two together, the average homeowner is only paying $5,523 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Bedford, the other example we are using, their tax rate is only $2,276, except the average home price is $368,000. So their average tax payment per year is $8,385. So this is going to come back to haunt us forever. No, we really don't pay that much taxes in Keene. Look at Bedford. Look at Derry. Look at Milford. And I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm going to say that we all pay too much taxes. I'm going to say that in every one of these situations, every one of these towns, every one of these cities, government is growing every single year. The school, the police force, the police department, the fire department, all services are growing. The cost to maintain those individuals, especially in retirement, is growing because they are, you know, that's a powerful union right there.
Well,
so yeah, the tax rate's bad everywhere. But you know what? And you know what? There's a reason why I don't live in Bedford. And there's a reason why I live in Keene, because I knew that even considering how high the taxes were here, that I could afford a home here.
They are still the cheapest on that list.
I am constantly scouring Zillow. Zillow, looking for, you know, comparable houses in the area, because I would love to live in one of the surrounding towns with the lower tax rate, and I'll drive to Keene, but I can't find it because the homes are so expensive, or just a little bit. They're just a little bit out of my range. So yeah, right. I live in Keene for a reason. But by the way, for the people who want to come move here, this is good news for you too. Good news for the city, so they can rub this in our faces. Good news for people who want to move here and are maybe considering other areas. Like, and by the way, Manchester is, if you can live in a big city with 100,000 population, Manchester is probably the way to go. 2344 tax rate, average home price is more than Keene, 195, and their taxes are lower than in Keene for a much higher priced house. But you have to live with a bunch of people, and no, I'm tired of those big population zones. I don't know about you, Shauna. I know you grew up in one as well, but much bigger than where I grew up. How many million people lived where you lived?
I lived in Southern California. It was a hellhole, and it was unlivable unless you had a car. And guess what? I didn't have.
Uh-oh.
So, oh well. It's really expensive everywhere you go. There is no escape. Did you find anything else in here that was interesting to you?
There's a lot of numbers.
Okay.
definitely check this out. I think I'll just put this right on the Facebook page.
I think that would be useful.
And I know Joe would love this. This is good stuff. Let's move on. The other presentation that happened right after this. What? Might stop me if I'm...
No, go on.
No, seriously.
We got 10 minutes. Let's go.
We can find something else to talk about. The other presentation that occurred right afterwards was the citywide reevaluation process. They do it every 5 years, according to law. If you got that letter in the mail like I did, saying that your assessed value of your home has changed, some people went down. Some people stayed the same, and if you were me, the price of my house went up 16%.
Oh my God! What did you do to deserve that?
Well,
who did you make mad?
It's just where I live. Now they did both.
So this is about what also affected you directly. You got your home reassessed. Your individual home. You only have one, and. What they presented to the city council meeting that we saw, where we saw this, was their reevaluation, reassessment of everybody's home in Keene.
This whole project, this whole slideshow is explaining their process. Because there was a lot of people, I think they had to deal with like 200 individuals who were not happy with the value that they got. And... This is explaining how they did what they did. This is, again, something else that's pretty lengthy. You should definitely check it out. Even if you're a renter, you know, check it out and see how they do it. Basically, what happens is what's the ratio that I'm...
There was a standard deviation or not...
Oh, I forgot the name of it.
Are you talking about the ratio of what it sold for versus equalization ratio?
Equalization ratio. So in order to, because city is always growing, the tax rate, they try to keep it where it's at.
Yep.
And so the value, your house value.
They try to, wait.
Your value is changing, but they don't reevaluate.
They try to keep it where it's at? Are you saying they try to get the same amount of money every year? So they're
And keep the tax rate where it's at.
Where it's at.
So what
does that mean?
At 34 or 33 or wherever it was the previous
year. So not change it every year so people are, you know, highs and lows?
Correct.
Okay.
So what they do is the ratio changes. It starts at 100% and it can go 10% or 10% down or 10% up. And by the time they finally got around to doing this reevaluation, it was at 106%. So people in Keene were paying 106% of their actual property value. It was skewed. It wasn't where it was supposed to be. Some people were paying more than they should have. Some people were paying less. And so this reevaluation fixed that. It's back to 100%, at least for the individual properties. Now, the commercial is a little different because that was also reevaluated. Now, the big question is, what's this going to do to the tax rate?
What could it do to the tax rate?
It's going to drive the tax rate up. Since 2007, the assessed value of Keene has been going down.
So homes are worth less than...
Homes and businesses are worth less than they were the previous year.
However, the city
of Keene, the government of Keene, is not shrinking. In fact, it's growing.
Yep.
So they have to maintain... They're still spending the same amount of money or more.
So they need more money.
So the tax rate has to go up. To support that. I believe that the assessed value of Keene is going to go down again this year, which means the tax rate is going to have to go up because the city spending hasn't gone down, so the tax rate is going to have to go up. But if you're a person where your assessed value actually went down, no big deal. Your tax rate's going up, your assessed value goes down, so you're actually probably going to pay the same amount of taxes you did last year, unless you're me and you're getting double whammied. So my value went up, and the tax rate's going up, so I'm going to get hit twice.
Well,
and you rent.
I rent from you.
So yes, so I might have to. We might have to talk after this.
But enough. Yeah, I bet. But it still sounds like even if your assessed value goes down, you know, if I got a letter in the mail that says the assessed value of your house went down, I would immediately think,
good,
that means I'm paying less in property taxes.
Unless you're,
but because the assessed value goes down and it goes down for everybody else because reality, we don't have enough money to pay for, you know, the pink stripes down the road or the blue lines or whatever.
No pink stripes.
And
yet.
Not just They're simply coming. That, but just the idea of, you know, everything has to be paid for. You know, or not everything has to be paid for, but everything has to be done, and not everything has to be done. You know, I mean, the
well, everyone's gotten
school,
used to
the school budget is completely different from city budget. I understand, but the kids don't need brand new laptop netbooks every year. They don't, and you know, the idea that everything has to be paid for or everything has to be done, but the city, the people who live in the city, who live under the city, can't afford it. And you think for like one brief second, like, oh, the way that the local government can get me by having me, you know, pay the property taxes and all that is going down.
Mm-hmm.
And no, because they're going to raise it because you did a bad thing by living in a home, owning a home that went down in value. And I'm not saying that property tax is bad or, you know,
I am.
Go ahead and make your case, but it's just that it's so much and it's so there's got to be another way to handle it.
Well, all right.
So even though, you know, you got your double whammy and that is so infuriating and so I'd rather go to work than hear about it. But even for people whose value went down, it's still just a trap.
Well, the good news is possibly there are enough commercial properties that actually went up in value that it will
to make up the difference.
It will make up the difference. And so property owners, won't feel it, the tax rate might stay exactly where it's at.
Well, is it a different tax rate for residential as for commercial?
I don't know how it works. I believe that they still deal with that same 34.44 or whatever it is. Actually, that was 215, by the way. It's 35 this year. I believe they deal with that same number, but I'm not sure exactly how everything is calculated.
Is upon.
And if you live in the TIF district, it's a whole nother ball game. And by the way, I'm going to go talk to Bill Dow, the city clerk, this week. I'm going to talk to him about the TIF district, which has been something I've been concerned with. Another thing that I saw, and there's also an appeal process, but before we get to that, they broke down the commercial parcels. In Keene, 174 of them, and this is more than four-unit apartment buildings, 174 apartment buildings in Keene, 444 improved commercial, 88 industrial, and 101 vacant parcels. And I think someone actually asked if that number is normal. What did you say that was, 12%?
Somebody asked if that number was normal, yeah. And they said, yeah, kind of, basically, whatever. That was what happened.
I find that interesting. I tried to do a quick Google search to see what is like a normal number to have in a stable community,
mm-hmm.
of like vacant private buildings, residential buildings versus like commercial buildings. I couldn't find any numbers, so
it could be the new normal.
It seems like a whole lot. So
that's 807
total commercial buildings. 101 of them are empty. Or they're in the process of getting filled again.
It's not taking into account turnover.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's not taking into account cultural, spontaneous, no one's going to rent that building.
Yeah, it would also be a problem if everything was full and no one was building anything else. Then we'd also have another kind of problem.
Well, there is also building what stuff that is being built already. Like if I, you know, have something built down the street, I'm not gonna rent this place that's, you know, I'm going here, I'm not going there. It's not anything about this place. Perhaps when they got the permits to start building this new building, that place was already full or was already occupied. So I think just 12% or just 12.5%, it doesn't tell the whole story. You know, has it been, was it a great fire that took out 1/8 of the whole city at once? No, it's, you know, just turnover. People run shoddy businesses. People just decide to do something else. They just sell the business and move.
Yeah.
They just, I mean, look at rental leases that are signed in June as opposed to in August.
Yeah, I would say that number is probably healthy. I would say, though, if it's just one spot like Center of Keene, that's probably that's an unhealthy. But if it's just it's spread throughout Keene, one here, one there, it's probably.
Well, look at
it's probably pretty normal.
Look at the Walpole Bank that's being built off of Court Street.
Yeah,
right,
we're getting some growth.
Well,
up here.
Look at that. That's a new building. There's another building somewhere in Keene that's vacant. So do they cancel each other out? Does a number net mean a net positive because there's a new building, new infrastructure being built? Is it a net negative because a built structure is not being used right now? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, I would say the question is just not enough. The person who answered shouldn't have even answered it. Of being like, yeah, sure, whatever. He just said, no, it's not enough information. We're not giving you enough. We're just giving you the raw numbers. And like Jay Kahn said over and over, the numbers tell a story, but it's really whatever you want to make
it's
of
whatever
it.
It's however you want to interpret it. Any taxpayer who disagrees with his or her assessment may file an abatement application with the city after the final tax bill and before March 1. I think taxes come out early December or something like that. I went through the whole process. Maybe I'll talk about it on another show. It's lengthy. I went through the city process, and then I went through the state process. And it took 2 years. And it didn't really do me any good. I got a couple of years off, and now they're hitting me. They're hitting me hard.
There is no escape.
You have been watching Citizen Kane. Head on over to our website, citizenkane.org. All the previous shows are there for you to watch at your leisure. Like our Facebook. I post a lot of stuff there. I'll probably post these stats, these informational statistics up, so you can also look at those. They'll definitely be at the webpage, but Facebook's a good way to get to us. And of course, you can call that number anytime you want to, 267-521-2771. Just not going to pick it up, but you can leave me a message. Shauna?
I got nothing.
You're tired. I got to get you nappy time. Get you some.
You can send your emails to show@citizenkane.org. The Facebook page is facebook.com/citizenkane.org.
Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you again next Sunday, 8 to 9 p.m. Good night.